Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bradfold, Judge Werke, Judge Riley, the Honorable Diane Bradfold presiding.
Good morning. Today's date is December 8th, 2020. We are appearing today at the Minnesota Court of Appeals via zoom.gov. Before we proceed with the first matter on the calendar, I'd just like to make sure that everyone's mic is working and that you're hearing us. I know you've already had a sound check, but let's just do it one more time. So I think counsel for appellant is Mr. Ella, is that right? And are you, would you confirm that you can hear us and then I will know that we can hear you?
I can hear you, Your Honor. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you very much. And then is Ms. Veit, I think, for counsel for respondent. Is that right?
That's right. Lisa Veit for the City of St. Paul.
All right. And so I can hear you and you can hear us, I take it.
Yes, I can.
All right. And I know you both know if something were to go awry with technology during the course of the argument, you know what to do. So I will trust that you will take those steps if you need to, but hopefully things will go smoothly. So with that, I will have the marshal call the first case on the calendar set for 9:30 a.m.
Calling A20-0581 in the matter of the cigarette, tobacco, and gas station licenses held by Midway University and Hamlin LLC.
All right, I'll make just a few quick remarks before I turn it over to the appellant. I know you both know these rules, but I'll just give them as reminders. So first of all, we are recording today's proceedings and it becomes available later on the court's website. So if you would identify yourself as well as your client for the record before you start your remarks, that would be greatly appreciated. And then please keep an eye on the clock. You can see that it should be visible on your screen right now and it will count down. The 15 minutes tends to go kind of quickly. We really appreciate your appearance today and look forward to having a conversation with you about this appeal. So with that, I think we're ready to proceed. Counsel for appellant, you can begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Ella, E-L-L-A, on behalf of appellant, relator, Midway University in Hamlin, LLC, doing business as Midway Amoco BP. I'll refer to my client as Midway BP. Your Honors, this is a case about a business license revocation. Two business licenses, one for a gas station, one for tobacco in the City of St. Paul. A business license is a property right which cannot be taken away without due process. The decision by the City of St. Paul here to jump two levels on the presumptive matrix from a $1,000 penalty to complete revocation was arbitrary and capricious and also motivated by scapegoating and bias. After about 9 years without any problems, the City of St. Paul took away my client's licenses, tobacco and gas station licenses, because of
one of your primary arguments that you have is that you were denied due process. And I really can't follow the logic of that because you were notified on July 26th of the revocation. And it appears that the violations, at least all but one, had occurred. And you also then had the ability 4 months later to be in front of the city. So what process was denied? What exactly are you complaining about?
Sure, Your Honor. I mean, there's many aspects of due process. And for example, one is a full hearing. And certainly we concede that we had a full hearing, but the entire process and the decision ultimately of the city council did not afford due process because it was based on improper motives and not supported by substantial.
Well, motives have to do with your bias argument, but terms of due process though, what specifically are you saying that you were denied?
Well, and obviously like a lot of cases, these issues are intertwined, but what we're saying is in terms of notice that instead of working with my client on a step-by-step basis to identify and resolve issues, the city kind of sat back and collected all these violations over a long period of time and then kind of ambushed my client with one blunderbuss notice of all these violations without
Except Mr. Ella, when I read the record in the ALJ's findings, most of the events that concerned people occurred in June. It wasn't, you talk about it going back 11 months to August of the year before, right. But it seems that the bulk of the evidence that was received by the ALJ and considered by the ALJ and the city council happened in a very short period of time. As I understand it, your client hired a security firm who quit in March, but then it was April, May, but really escalating in June, including a homicide in the parking lot when your client did not get or hire a new security firm. And so I don't necessarily buy your argument that the city waited for months and months before filing a notice of revocation.
Most of the incidents occurred in the summer of 2019, I would say June and July. But if you look at the citation or the notice, it does include factual allegations going back approximately 11 months. And Your Honor mentioned the homicide. I mean, that wasn't even technically the basis for the notice or the ALJ's findings, but this gets to the heart of the matter, which is that there was a lot of crime in the city of St. Paul in the summer of 2019. And if you look at the nature of the alleged violations, there's a couple of sort of petty violations, an allegation that someone had a pack of cigarettes and was maybe selling single cigarettes. And then you have this blanket sort of diffuse allegation of crime in the neighborhood. And this is the issue, Your Honor, is that the city's accusing or holding my client accountable for, you know, you mentioned a homicide, an escalation of crime in the neighborhood, and saying that my client didn't do more to prevent unrest. Yet the police said they were pulled off the Midway neighborhood to go to other areas. And Sergeant Vang Sticklish said it would have taken at least 30 cops to get in control of these crowds. And the city wants my client to hire a second clerk behind the counter when it would take 30 cops. In the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeal, in Johnson v. Morales, the Sixth Circuit said it was not rational to shut down a single business, in that case, a restaurant, to deter crime in an area because it would penalize the restaurant's mere existence. That's what's happening here. I want to point out something I think important. The ALJ found, and this finding was adopted by the city, the BP Midway was in full compliance with the special conditions of its licenses, including video surveillance, adequate lighting, adequate fencing, clean site. My client was planning on building a brand new facility with even brighter lights and a bakery and donuts and a car wash. And yet the city, the ultimate finding and approach of the city was to blame Midway BP for the crime in the neighborhood. And yet the city and the police did nothing to help my client address these issues. They abandoned the neighborhood. They said, the city in its brief says, oh, my client should have done more to monitor the business and should have done more to institute policies to deter people from gathering.
Why didn't you go back to the city then? Why didn't you file your exceptions to the ALJ report and go back to the city in terms of how you feel aggrieved by the remedy that was fashioned?
Not sure I understand the question. Certainly we did appear at the city council and ask for a lower sort of discipline. If you look at the cup food.
This is Judge Riley. To follow up on Judge Workey's question, the city says that you failed to challenge the findings of the ALJ before the city council, and therefore you're precluded from arguing that the ALJ made a mistake or erred in his findings. How do you respond to that?
That's simply not what the statute says, Your Honor. The statute says that the city or the agency must afford the party adversely affected the opportunity to file exceptions and present argument.
But when I read what your proposed remedy was, your proposed resolution that you submitted to the city council, it didn't say anything about the ALJ's findings. It was more the remedy shouldn't be so extreme as to totally revoke your license. It should be a step up. Am I wrong in reading your proposed resolution that way?
Proposed orders. Yeah, not entirely, because I think if you look at Cup Foods and Venus, The penalties there were all lesser than what my client received, which is total, complete revocation. In the other cases, it was stayed or it was, you know, a year. Here, he's completely out of business. And it didn't make sense, you know, for the city to have a vacant lot. Now, we do contest some of the factual findings, and we did appear and make an argument to the city council. I do not agree at all. I think it's absurd to say that section 14.61 in any way precludes us from challenging factual findings on the Court of Appeals. We've challenged this every step of the process, but we are focused on the penalty because it doesn't make sense for the city or my client for there to be a complete revocation where the city didn't take any steps to work with my client or the neighborhood to prevent crime. It simply blamed the crime on the existence of a gas station. If you look at Cup Foods, they had a crime prevention specialist go in there and work with them and come back and visit and have suggestions. If you look at the footnote in Cup Foods, The court in that case said disagreed with findings in Massachusetts in the Sixth Circuit, saying that I cited before that you can't blame a business for crime in the neighborhood. And they cited this case from the city of Mankato case, saying a city may take adverse license action in response to criminal activity if the licensee does not cooperate. That's the only footnote in Cup Foods. Cooperate takes two.
Right, Mr. Ella, I have a question for you. It sounds to me as if the thrust of your argument is your dissatisfaction. Of course, your dissatisfaction with the remedy that was fashioned by the ALJ. But you also raise issues in terms of the evidence that was provided. Are you agreeing that the findings of the ALJ, which you didn't challenge, are in fact accurate? In other words, is it just the remedy? Is it the remedy that you feel is too harsh and not applicable to your clients?
No, we absolutely challenged the evidentiary findings.
But then if you do challenge the evidentiary findings, why didn't you file then your ability to submit an exception to the ALJ findings?
You know, my partner had about as much time before the city council as I have today, and he was focused on reaching a resolution for both parties. There's no time in the city council to go through selection of evidentiary exceptions. And when we do so today, Your Honor, it is not precluded by 1461. No court's ever said that. That's not what the statute says. It says the obligation is on the agency to provide an opportunity, and then there's an opportunity then to petition for certiorari from there. But I do want to focus on the evidence because it's part of the evidentiary requirement here is the evidence as a whole. The city must have substantial evidence under the Administrative Procedures Act as adopted by the courts for these city decisions, must have substantial evidence to support substantial and compelling reasons to deviate from the presumption. And overall, we submit the city doesn't have that evidence, even in a sense, if you agree with the findings.
Here's what I'm getting at, Mr. Ellen. Let's talk about the single cigarette sales. So that's part of your argument that you say that they didn't establish that there was not substantial evidence that in fact your client sold individual cigarettes, but that the testimony, at least my review of the record, the testimony at the hearing, not only on video, but the testimony represented that is in fact true. I don't know how we set that aside because we don't determine conflicting testimony, and certainly there was nothing to support your position.
Well, I looked at the video again last night and it's far from clear. It just shows a guy with a pack of cigarettes, not a carton, just a pack of cigarettes, and he says they're his cigarettes. But my point is a larger one. You have a couple of petty allegations of selling a single cigarette, and then you have this blanket accusation that my client didn't operate a gas station in a safe manner. And the petty allegations, even if true, let's say, aren't substantial evidence such to support deviation from the presumptive penalty matrix. And the larger allegation is hypocritical. It was the city that wasn't protecting the neighborhood from crime. And instead of working with or cooperating with my client offered to tried to get St. Paul police. They wouldn't allow him to hire off-duty police officers. They accused him of being a terrorist and said, and we say forced away the security company. He had a plan that would have done a lot to improve the situation, which is to build a nice, new, shiny, well-lit facility. And that was right in front of the city. And yet they took the choice to shut him down and create a vacant lot. And it's just, if you look at the evidence as a whole, it's not substantial evidence enough to support substantial and compelling reasons for the penalty that they applied. And I think that if you look
what
at the
what is it video, that you want, what is it that you feel that we should do? Set it back where you have, because you've argued that you were denied due process, do you want to set it back to have another hearing? Or are you saying that the evidence wasn't there and we should just totally undo it? Or are you saying we should adopt your remedy? I mean, what is it that you're looking for us to fashion?
Sure, we're asking the court either reverse it for essentially for the one penalty down on the matrix, which would still be an upward deviation. Remember, they jumped twice. We're suggesting go down, reverse, and just apply one down, which is $5,000 or $10,000 penalty, and then essentially time served. They've been out of business now for a long time. Or remand for further consideration based on the fact that there just isn't substantial evidence to support it and that provides substantial reasons to make this huge deviation, you know, with one appearance to go from, you know, from the beginning of the matrix to the nuclear option of complete shutdown, which we don't see in any of these other cases involving business licenses in this city business licenses in the state of Minnesota.
So, Mr. Ella, I see that your time has elapsed. Of course, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to go that route. And with that, I think we're ready for you, Ms. Veit, counsel for respondent. The clock has been reset and you can begin when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lisa Veit and I represent the city of St. Paul, and the city greatly appreciates the court's time and attention to this matter. As you've noted, the City Council of the City of St. Paul was the trier of fact and decision maker in the case before you. And you are correct, the Court of Appeals does not need to retry this case. There are not any facts in dispute. Relator, as you noted, presented to the City Council what he called a mirror image of the facts and the findings that the city presented. He did not present any objections, did not challenge any credibility, did not bring, he basically agreed with all the findings of the ALJ. And the primary issue now is that Relator is trying to get a second opinion or a second chance at trial at the appellate level. But the City Council already reviewed the record and listened to his testimony and decided accordingly in its quasi-judicial capacity. Relator wants to retry the facts, but they have already been tried and ruled upon.
Ms. Veit, here's what I'm curious about. Okay, so if I agree that doesn't get retried, does the Court of Appeals have the ability to weigh in on the sanction if we collectively, and believe me, I'm not speaking for the panel, thought that you were the city was a bit harsh as far as, you know, that's it, you're out, you've lost your license, you're out of business. Do we even have the authority to do that?
I think that you would have the authority to do that if you found that the evidence was not substantial and not compelling, and that we did not provide written reasons for the decision that was made. The distinction between this case and Cup Foods is that in that case, the ALJ actually recommended a lesser penalty than revocation, and the Minneapolis City Council deviated from the ALJ's recommendation up to a revocation of the license and did not provide any written findings to support that decision. In this particular case, the ALJ was the one who recommended revocation, and the city council agreed with that, and Relator presented only the ALJ's findings of fact as the basis for his request for a lower penalty.
So council, if I can just follow up quickly, is your view that the relator should have had they wanted to present the substantial evidence review to this court, it's your opinion that the relator needed to file exceptions with the city council and identify the findings of fact that it disagreed with and why? Is that correct? Am I following your argument?
It is correct.
Okay. And you base that on 14.61, is that right?
Yes.
And that, because that doesn't specifically comment on waiver, I don't think, but it does give the mechanism of filing exceptions.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your sentence.
Oh, I'm sorry. So 14.61, I think, is the authority you rely on, which does give the mechanism of filing exceptions by the relator, but it doesn't specifically say that a failure to file exceptions is a waiver.
I don't think it says that directly, but there is case law out there which indicates what the standard of review is before this court. And the standard of review in this matter is that the Court of Appeals is to give the city's findings a presumption of correctness and only overturn them if they are not substantiated by any facts at all. The Court of Appeals does not need to retry the facts. It does not make credibility determinations. So by viewing that case and what it says, it is pretty clear that the Court of Appeals does not have a second trial to retry, make any credibility or findings of fact. What the Court of Appeals does is to review the record.
Yeah, so council, I think I understand our role in this. I'm still struggling a bit with what the role of the city council was, because it sounds like you're describing a dual capacity where the city council has both an appellate style review of the ALJ's decision as well as the opportunity, if it so chose, like the Cup Foods case suggests that the Minneapolis City Council had the authority to order a different penalty, but then they would have needed to have done additional findings of fact. So presumably taken some evidence. Is that how you read Cup Foods?
The way that I read Cup Foods is that the case was quite similar to this one, ironically enough, in the egregious behavior that was occurring on the premises. And the city council did deviate upward from what the ALJ recommended in that case. But in that case, the city council did not provide reasons for its decision to depart upward. In this case, the city council took the ALJ's findings of fact, and the findings were very specific. He stated that the situation was atypical and deeply disturbing. The Relator did not dispute that his business was having an incredibly negative impact on the neighborhood around him. And the relator did not dispute that the crime that he was talking about was all in his parking lot. There might have been other crime in the city of St. Paul, but this place was a hotbed of criminal activity. And as noted, the relator was selling flavored tobacco. That's all on video. He sold flavored tobacco. He sold glass vials filled with steel wool. And I don't think flowers survive well in steel wool. And he kept selling those until he got a notice of violation. It's kind of incredible for a relator to state that the city was supposed to be watching his every move and babysitting him, so that he didn't violate the law.
I want to get back to Mr. Ella's procedural due process argument. And your St. Paul Legislative Code 310.05 says that the hearing examiner, so the ALJ's report is not a final decision. Now I'm quoting, the council may accept, reject, or modify the findings, conclusions, and recommendations of the hearing examiner, and provides the opportunity for relator to present oral or written arguments alleging error either in the findings or in the remedy. Is that how it works?
Yes, that is how it works.
Because Mr. Ella and I read, as he said, he had about as much time or less in front of the city council as he has here. So it's not a lot of time if you're contesting facts or remedies.
Right. And he had an opportunity to present as much in writing as he wished to do. He did not avail himself of that opportunity. He simply accepted all of those findings of fact. And Relator did appear in front of the city council, and he talked for quite some time. And the testimony he gave focused on two main topics. Number one, he claimed that he was a victim of crime in the neighborhood. And he also focused on his plan to rebuild and start over. He did not file any objections to the testimony of the police officers or all the findings of fact. As indicated, most of these incidents happened between April and July of 2019 and primarily in June. There was a spate of incidents in June, and he failed to accept responsibility for complying with the law. He admitted before the city council to his failure to keep criminal activity off the premises, and yet continues at the same time arguing that he's a victim of crime in St. Paul. And the fact is, Relator drew crime to his business by selling flavored tobacco and these drug vials, which one of his clerks said he sold 36 of those a night. He continued selling those even after the notice of revocation. I don't know exactly when he stopped selling them, but they were there. So he drew criminal activity to his place because he was willing to violate the law, sell single cigarettes, flavored tobacco, and to allow partying in his parking lot instead of having people leave the premises. The calls that were made, the 100 police calls from April to July of 2019 did not come from the store. They came from the neighborhood. And they were all the testimony of the police officers that's cited by Relator in his memorandum is all directed at the crime at this particular site. Relator was responsible for running his own business, for not selling illegal products, and for not encouraging that kind of activity on the premises. But he didn't do that. He simply continued to have only one clerk on staff at 10 p.m. And going into those night hours that were so troubling, and didn't change it, and continued to sell whatever products he wanted to, because he knew that people would come in and buy them. So basically the situation at this corner was very upsetting. The city council, they expressed their displeasure at his failure to accept responsibility for running his own business. That's what he did during the ALJ hearing. He also refused to, even after pleading guilty to running his business in an unlawful manner, He also kept saying that it wasn't his fault. But the other, you know, gas stations that don't sell illegal products are not going to draw crime the way that this gas station did. And there was gang activity, there were drug transactions, you know, and most of this happened in a very short period of time. And it's, there is no law to support Relator's claim that the city was supposed to be there and counseling him through operating a business in a legal manner. The St. Paul City Council considered all of the findings that were before it, and the key element here is that Relator did not provide any alternative facts or objections. He did not undermine the credibility of any of the witnesses that the city presented, and the City Council had the record before it, and Relator did have the chance to testify, and as I indicated, he simply once again portrayed himself as a victim and did not take responsibility for what happened at that gas station, and instead just made a plea to try again. But that's not something that the Court of Appeals needs to weigh in on. The facts have already been determined. The credibility has been weighed, and the Court of Appeals should uphold the very substantial and compelling reasons that the city made this decision.
So. All right, Ms. Veit, did you wanna add anything else, or are there questions from the panel members? All right, so thank you, Ms. Veit. I think with that, I'll have the marshal reset the clock. And there we go. Mr. Ella, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you again, Your Honors. I just want to dispose of the section 14.61 Minnesota statute. I mean, this does not preclude any argument on our behalf at the Court of Appeals. It's a requirement of the city, not a requirement of the licensee. The city must allow an opportunity to file exceptions and an opportunity to present argument, which we did. There were discussions of the factual findings, both in our proposed resolution and in the testimony of Mr. Alul before the council and Mr. McGillis. But let's set that aside. Even if we accept the facts as found by the administrative law judge, the conclusions he drew are not supported, even if we, which I don't concede, all the facts, but even if we did, the conclusions are not based on substantial evidence sufficient to show substantial and compelling reasons to deviate, more than double deviate from a $1,000 fine to complete shutdown of both the, and revocation of both the tobacco and the gas station license. And by the way, what does selling single cigarettes have to do with a gas station license? Nothing. I mean, I think the problem here is that the city blamed my client for crime in the neighborhood. And Ms. Veit said that there was drug transactions on the premises. That was not in evidence. She called my client guilty. This is not a criminal case. I don't think that's the appropriate word. She said my client portrayed him as a victim. I would say all the businesses in that neighborhood were victims of poor policing. And we saw this past summer, the disconnect between police in the Twin Cities and the neighborhoods are supposed to serve and protect. It's arbitrary and capricious to revoke a business license because of crime in the neighborhood. And neither the administrative law judge, nor the city council, nor Ms. Veith and her appellate brief has explained what my client was supposed to do to prevent crime in the area. As it's undisputed that he stopped selling this paraphernalia, which I don't think is technically illegal. He stopped selling flavored tobacco. He did try to hire a security agency. The St. Paul City Police threatened, there's testimony in the record that they said they were gonna shut him down, that they thought he was a terrorist, and that they were that they threatened the private security agency and refused to allow private police officers. So you have a situation where my client did hire a private security agency who quit and then was sanctioned with the ultimate sanction because it couldn't find another security agency to replace that first one. There was a complete breakdown of law and order in the neighborhood, and it's not the fault of BP Amoco, but it is the fault of the city to not be interactive and work with my client to be solution oriented instead of punitive. It was biased scapegoating to blame crime in the area on a gas station when the St. Paul City Police, instead of going after felonies, we're sending people into, you know, take notes about whether someone bought cigarettes or not who was underage, when that person didn't leave with a packet of cigarettes, didn't leave with a receipt. But those are the petty violations. I mean, they're important, but they don't justify revocation. The revocation was scapegoating and bias, and the evidence, even if the facts are presumed to be true, which we don't concede, they don't provide substantial evidence for the upward departure. And that's the crux of the case here, Your Honor. This is a case where the city engaged in overreaching, and it has leeway, but it's still subject to the state and federal constitution requirements of due process for a property interest in a business license. And we ask the court to reverse and apply the third matrix, not the fourth, which is still an upward deviation, which is a $2,000 fine, 10-day suspension, and it's been obviously way more than 10 days. But my client would like to move forward, build a shiny new gas station on a hill. No, it's not on a hill, but on an intersection, which I think would be for the best interest of all concerned. So we thank you for your time, Ron.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ella, Ms. Veit, both lawyers. This matter was very well presented, and we appreciate hearing from you today about these issues. So with that, the matter is submitted to this court for a decision. You will receive a written decision within the statutory timeframe. So our thanks to you again.